All right, so Bill, you've spent some time with some bears. See, I've never seen a grizzly bear in the wild. I've seen tons of black bears, but never a grizzly bear.
You'll probably see a black bear here before you leave, because there's one that likes to come down here and hang out right about 20 yards away from where we're sitting outside. And I've got some pictures of them. But, yeah, about 3 years ago, I was up in Glacier Park. I've been planting some fruit trees, planting some raspberry bushes, and decided to take the afternoon off, go up to Glacier, and just kind of bliss out in nature. And I took that hike. I think it's Hidden Lakes up there. And it's so glorious and tranquil. I'm coming from L.A., where I'm used to noise and sirens and fire engines and helicopters, and all of a sudden it's just total absolute silence. And it's just beautifully cathartic and peaceful in my soul. And I'm just hanging out, sitting there by the lake. I hear this rustling in the bushes about 40 yards to my right. And at first I thought it was just another couple hikers coming down, but it was kind of late in the afternoon. And being kind of a city slicker dumbass, I forgot the fact that animals come down to the lake to drink at night. Maybe that's not a great place to hang out in grizzly bear country. So then I realized it wasn't a hiker, and I saw some rustling. Thought, maybe it's just a deer. And fortunately for me, it was a very windy day, or at least the wind had picked up at that time in the afternoon. And so I was downwind from the bear, because you know the old American Indian saying that if a pin drops in the forest, you know, the bear hears it, the eagle sees it, and the bear smells it, the deer hears it, and the eagle sees it. So bears have an excellent sense of smell. But I think because I was downwind, it didn't smell me. And there was foliage, thick foliage, right up to the shore of the lake. So even though I was like 40 yards away, I don't think this bear saw me and didn't smell me. So I look out and I see this big, giant grizzly bear head, you know, like Bigfoot, sticking its head out drinking from the lake. And I thought, uh-oh. And it just so happened, that part of the lake, there's no big trees to climb. I thought, what am I going to do? I'm unarmed. I don't have bear spray. This thing can outrun me. And right now I'm thinking, my life, I'm seeing my life flash before me.
Stop right there. I got to point out. So I'm with Bill Schneiders, and Bill, when you were a younger man, you were something of an athlete. Is that right?
Well, that's a loosely defined term, but yeah, I guess you could say that. I played a lot of sports and stuff.
Well, you played some pro football, didn't you?
I just went to camp. I was there for a cup of coffee, so I never had it caught on with any team, but I played college football.
Okay, all right. So you've got some athletic history. I just wanted to point that out real quick. All right. So you're not quite as big as me, but you're a big guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, more on the muscly side than the pie-loving side.
I love pie too, but but the funny thing is, on the athletic, I tell you, it's amazing when a grizzly bear starts chasing you, the adrenaline rush and how fast that athleticism comes back, because I was like Ronaldo Nehemiah hurtling over tree stumps. And I honestly think I told you before the podcast, I believe that I am the true 100 meter world record holder, not Usain Bolt from Jamaica, because I don't think any human being has ever run as fast as I did when that grizzly bear decided to start coming my way.
It didn't know what it was there to record it. And you were going uphill, too.
And I was going uphill, too, which adds another dimension. You know, you hear those stories about the mother that picks up the car because her child's trapped underneath, and it's this sudden surge of adrenaline. It was like one of those things.
Okay. All right. So, like the Incredible Hulk.
Something like that, yeah. Although my clothes weren't torn, I didn't quite, but it's the speed equivalent of Hulk's muscularity, you could probably say, is an accurate analogy. Yeah.
So you, for a moment there, you were the Flash, and you were hauling ass uphill, and because you're here today, it's kind of evidence that the bear did not eat you.
Yes.
Because and your whole effort here was really about this, the sign that you passed on the way up there says, "Do not feed the bears."
Yes. And it was self-preservation definitely kicked in. You know, the funny thing is that the scenery was so beautiful. I was lulled into this hypnotic kind of beautiful, peaceful state by just the beauty of nature and the silence, utter silence. I remember before that bear came, a fish jumped in that lake, and it was like an earthquake or something. There was such silence that even the smallest little sound was totally magnified. But yeah, I think when I started running, it was that adrenaline rush, and Carl Lewis takes the silver to me running up that hill. I promise you that.
All right, so today we are going to talk about permaculture, mm-hmm. but we're at the PDC event, we're up in Montana, we're in Lakeside, Montana right now, which is just up the road from Dayton, Montana, mm-hmm. And Sep will be arriving soon, and Bill is going to go with me to see Sep. But for the PDC that's currently going on, it just started yesterday, And Bill's not going to that, but Bill's got a place, and we're hanging out. And right now the event, they're teaching. In fact, today they're teaching the ethics and principles. And I'm sure that there are people that are listening to this podcast that are thinking, "Oh, Paul really needs to go and sit in on that one." You know, probably could learn some things. And I think I've been pretty good at when they give presentations that I've been. So they said, "Oh, look, here's somebody planting some stuff in some tires," and somebody asked the question, "Well, what about, isn't the tires going to exude toxic gick into the soil?" No. And I decided to keep my mouth shut. Because I wanted to stand up and say, "You don't know what the fuck you're talking about." They will. You smell them. They're off gassing. So I'm willing to say that there somebody could be believing that it doesn't. And I just didn't want to be all like. So I mean, there's tons of stuff that goes on where I am biting my tongue, and. I'm trying to be respectful of others, trying real hard. I think I'm doing a pretty good job. But yesterday was mostly introductions, and then they did do some stuff where we went on the field. I got some footage of Skeeter saying, "Look there, chickweed, and here's the value of chickweed. Look there, this other plant, and here's the value of that plant. Look there, here's this other thing." And so we did a lot of that. I think there was a lot of good video. It was fun, and it was an awesome event. And then at one point in time, somebody stopped. We were at a dam that was collapsing for a pond, and I had been on this property before, and I'd said, "You got to fix that culvert, or the water's going to go over this dam." And
you mentioned that the day before when you and I were walking the property.
Well, right, I told it to you, and then when we were walking over it, then I think Kelly Ware said, "Paul's got a story about this dam." So everybody stopped, and I told my story, and Kelly Ware was out there with her video gear, and so maybe I'll show up on YouTube telling the story about this dam. But anyway, we've done some of that. However, there was something that happened yesterday, and I kind of feel like, permaculture's kind of having a difficult time moving past being this little fringe, tiny thing that hardly, and I really kind of believe it needs to go big. It needs to be the way, not a way that only one person out of 10,000 has even heard of. And so something came up yesterday that made me think, okay, I need to make a podcast, and we need to kind of at least get this issue out there. And that's like, there's not an easy and obvious answer, but I do believe that the issue is something that is dressed up with hearts, flowers, and rainbows, and therefore so often not being addressed appropriately. Mm-hmm. So now, having spent some time with Bill and I visited quite a lot before the event started. We visited like 2-3 months ago.
Yeah,
and it's kind of like, and one thing that we found that we have in common is that we both have a rich history in the corporate whore world. So Bill probably wants me to erase his name from this now for saying that. And so because Bill's still spending a little bit of time in that world.
Fortunately, I've structured it so that it's no longer, the way I've structured it is such that I'm in a position where I can serve in a way that's genuine and really help people to, find the best deal and not be taken advantage of by certain corporations. So I like to think the way I've structured it in my telecom consulting role is allows me to avoid a lot of that stuff. And because I work for myself now, there's a lot less of that. Of course, certain, problems come up in times of challenges, and I have to rely on other people to help me solve the problem, but it's nothing like it used to be in previous gigs I've had.
And of course, in the corporate whore world, I mean, the people who make the biggest money are often, I mean, probably 80%, 90% of the time, up to no good. I mean, they're bad guys, really. I mean, so when people are concerned about corporate stuff, and they're saying, "Oh, corporate stuff is bad," it's like, there's a good reason why they think that. Although I do want to emphasize, it's not a universal truth that there are a lot of very good, decent people who do very good, decent things, and then and some of those are doing very, very well in the corporate world, and it's kind of like
absolutely,
yeah, and it's I just really want to see more, and it's, and you know, if you've ever read the Dilbert comic strip, the sickening thing is that it's not all that funny because it's true, you know, and it's like people are actually feeling that Dilbert pain every day, and they just don't realize it's comedy.
Well, that movie Office Space, if you ever saw that, that was a really interesting parody. Whoever made that movie or wrote it obviously spent some time working in the corporate world in Silicon Valley, because there's some pretty pretty funny parodies there. But to your point too, I also, some of the greatest people I've ever met, some of my best friends to this day are people I met working at corporations, and there's some really heroic people, particularly some of the customer support people and tech people that go out there and actually fix problems, that just work under some difficult circumstances and don't get a lot of love from their bosses sometimes, and just do some heroically good things to serve the customer, take care of the customer. So, you know, it's certainly not a broad brushstroke for everyone.
So we're gonna talk about this a little bit, and then we're going to move back into the permaculture world. And there's a reason for that, and it'll all make sense by the end of the podcast. And so the thing is we're going to start off talking about an event. We're gonna have an equivalent event that's going to be an educational event I worked as an engineer, a software engineer, for decades, and so now you've worked more in the sales and stuff, right?
Yeah, telecom networking space, like Cisco, Nortel, Computer Associates, and software. So mostly telecommunications related for most of my career. Even at Cisco, although that's a networking company, the big push at the time was voice over IP and using, you know, sending your telecom traffic, voice traffic over the data network, so mainly telecom.
Yeah, so Skype, but for money.
Yeah, exactly. Well, like we say, there's Skype is a great tool if you want to call your relative that lives in Europe and talk for free, but there's a lot of features with modern, like hosted VoIP systems that can do things that Skype can't do, that have security and QoS, quality of service, that Skype can't do. But
right, so those of you that listen to my podcast where I've used Skype and suddenly their voices went all robotic or Skype dropped the call, I mean, there are those services where it's like the quality is high, so much higher, mm-hmm. that it's like that sort of thing is absolutely unacceptable. And then, of course, yeah, security and stuff like that.
And emergency 911 and things like that. That you know, emergency 911 that Skype and some of those services I don't believe offer. But
right.
But it's a great consumer tool. I wouldn't recommend it as a business tool. It's a great consumer tool. It's great for podcasts.
It's good enough.
Yeah.
It's good enough. So then I want to talk about the idea of an event. And so I've taught, in the corporate world, I've taught, I don't know, 50, 70 classes, maybe more. I'd have to sit down and really think about it. Maybe 100. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, I've got my much larger website, bigger than Permies, which is Code Ranch. And so there's all kinds of people. In fact, some of the sponsors of Code Ranch are people that teach classes and teach stuff. And so I feel like I'm very, very savvy in this space of how this industry works, because there's just, I don't know, thousands of classes going on every year that are this kind of class. And they're very much like how a PDC is done.
Right.
And so here's a few things to just mention. All right. So now I want to ask you the question, and then I'm going, you know, then you'll give a response, mm-hmm. and then I'll give a response to your response. And so I want to, because I got my reasons, but let's do it this way. All right. So like, let's say you're teaching a class,
mm-hmm.
you're an instructor.
Okay.
You are an instructor, and I know you, and I think damn, Bill's good. He's really good at what he teaches. So let's say that there's going to be and you know, the kind of classes you teach typically are $1,500 a class.
Mm-hmm.
So people pay $1,500 and then they can come and attend the class, and that seems to be, you know, I'm throwing that number out there. Does that seem like the normal rate for a week-long class in the geek world?
Absolutely. I mean, I think Cisco certification classes, which I was on the sales side, so I never taught those, but I've sat through parts of some, and I think they're typically a 2 or 3 day class and about $1,500 to get a certain, depending on what certification. If it's a CCNA, which is a lower certification, or like a CCIE, which is the highest certification Cisco gives, it's probably similar for your world, and Sun Java, you know, if you're taking a Java programming class or something. So that sounds right.
So depending on a lot of different things. I mean, if it's offered by Sun itself, which doesn't exist anymore, but if it's then usually it's $2,000 to $2,500 for a week.
Yes.
And for other people, it's like, you know, they'll sell them for $1,500 to $1,800 for a week.
Right.
So, but, so low ball. I'm trying to think of a week-long class under $1,500. It's rare, like maybe $1,400, you know. So I guess it depends on a lot of different factors. But so that's kind of the norm. So then if like, let's say I'm off talking to some guy that's like, you know, he's a manager or director at some company, and he's like, he thinks that I'm the smart guy in the industry, and I say to the guy, you know what you need to do? You need to have a class, and you need to have Bill Schneiders teach it. You know, and he's like, yeah, you know what? I don't know who that is, but I trust you on it, and set it up, make it happen. And so then I give you a call, get it going, and now it's set. You're going to do it. They're going to have, usually, like, when you do it, when it's a company, they're going to have, like, five or six guys there. But you're going to say, I need to fill the class with a few other people, and so, you know, is that going to be, you know, cool with you? And so that way it'll reduce your costs and stuff, and they're going to be like, yeah, that's cool. So now, let's just say that's all I've done. I just made the connection with you. You now have a new liaison. They might have you teach a bunch more classes. They might, you've now met this person, and you're going to teach this class for sure. You're going to get, you know, a certain amount of money for that. And then on top of that, you can fill the class with other people. And now, there are some traditions in the industry. And so, you're going to think, how are you going to say, thanks, Paul, you are awesome, I love you. How are you going to express your gratitude to me?
Well, a number of ways. I mean, first of all, I'd be grateful for you getting the gig for me. You know, I got to make a living, too. I got bills to pay. And you set up a class with paying customers that I didn't have to do much work or marketing or promotion. I just get to show up and do what I do best and teach that class. I'd be extremely grateful, in a number of ways. I'd probably, obviously, we have a business relationship, and I'd want to reciprocate quid pro quo some way, and whatever means was appropriate or enticing to you. Maybe that's sitting in the class and being a participant and not, you know, for free, or maybe that's, whatever your business is. Maybe I can do something for you and recommend you as a person that, hey, this guy's really good at setting up events, and he can do your marketing for you, and that's his business, or whatever the case may be. But it'd definitely be some kind of significant reciprocation.
Okay, now I'm kind of thinking there's a norm in the industry. There's like there's a standard thing in the industry that's done here, and I'm kind of hoping, I'm fishing for that standard thing. And now you're nodding, and you know what I'm saying. All right, so what's the standard form of your gratitude towards me?
Oh, money. I'd pay you, first of all. I mean, that goes without saying. I'd obviously, especially if you, let's say, you'd set up a class for me, and I'm getting X amount of dollars, I would give you a commission check or a huge percentage of that for doing the work for me and setting it up.
So like, if I just set up the class, and you know, you get enough students and it goes on with your life and everything, then what's kind of the industry norm for me just getting you connected to that guy and the class actually really truly happened, and so you got paid and everything worked out rosy. I did my, I mean, basically I made a connection with sane people. I connected a sane person to a sane person, and there's a certain amount of love that comes back from the industry on that. What is the number? How many dollars is the number? Like, what's the number where I'm going to be like, and that's the last time I talked to Bill? And what would be the number where it's like, I love Bill so much?
Well, I mean, probably could vary from industry to industry, but in my industry where I came from, it'd probably be like 35% would be, yeah, that's a nice commission. Paul did some work for me, and I'm going to take care of him. And maybe on the low end, like 10%, that means like, I kind of appreciate it. But
so for this class, it was $1,500 a ticket, and you're going to fill, you know, you've got a venue where you can have 45 people in it, you know.
Uh-oh.
And all I did was is I connected you, mm-hmm. and I connected you to the guy,
mm-hmm.
and now you got a venue, you've got a connection, and now you can also put more students in there if you want to. So now, rather than talking about percentages, we're throwing out actual dollar numbers here.
Mm-hmm.
So like, what's the amount of money that you give to me?
I was told there would be no math, in the famous words of Chevy Chase.
I thought you'd be tested on this as an adult.
Where's my calculator? I think, you know, 45 people at $2,000 a pop per class would be, what, 90,000? So 1,500 would be, you know, 25% less than that. So, I think 30-35%. I mean, that's the biggest part is driving the attendance. And if you can do that, you know, if I'm showing up to teach, I could do a class for 20 people and you get 45 in there.
Okay. I'm going to get to that part in a moment.
Okay.
Because basically I think that just by making this kind of, my experience has been $5,000 is like considered low and $10,000 is considered decent.
So, I would even say $10,000 is low for a class of 45 people, 1,500 a pop. That's, and you did all the marketing.
I just did the connection. I just made the initial connections because I'm going to go into the other. Because the next thing is like, so I know that like for a lot of classes in the tech industry, then I know that let's say now you're offering this class and widget loving. You're going to have a class on how to love your widgets.
Right.
You know, and it's a week long class, $1,500 a seat, and so then I've got I'm either a whole different person or I'm the same person.
Right.
And it's like, you know what? I found five people, and I've directed them to you, and they've given you the $1,500 to take the class.
Mm-hmm.
And then now I've got a number for that. That seems to be the industry norm for that number.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a $1,500 class. How much money do you give me each time somebody signs up through me? Like they found out, like I'm the guy that got them to you.
Mm-hmm. Again, there's variables too as far as what does it cost to rent this space or what, you know, there's those kinds of variables.
Right.
Does it include meals or whatever? Is it officially certified class? But generally speaking, I mean, I would go back to the 30-35%. Percentage, you know,
it's like $500. It's been my experience, $500.
Yeah, so $500.
So it's like, right. So my experience is that usually, like, if you set up a venue like that, you get it all set up, you connect point A to point B,
mm-hmm.
and these two people now have a thing that they're going to do,
right.
and it actually works out. Everything works out. I get $10,000 for that.
Right.
And then if I go and I populate the class with like, five students or just one student or whatever, usually the going rate's $500 a head.
Right.
You know, for each kid, each person, each individual, each adult that you put into there.
Right.
So that seems to me to be the industry norm.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. So I just wanted to so I'm glad that you're here to kind of validate that I'm not just making this shit up and that it's not crazy talk.
No, that's standard corporate. You know, I mean, again, it could vary a little bit from industry to industry, but, you know, plus or minus 10%, that's the industry norm.
So, I think that now we can move on to the permaculture ask stuff, and that is that, okay, so here we've got a PDC, and I want to start off by saying that Michael Pilarski is teaching this PDC, so he's leading the way. He's the guy that I contacted to teach this, and it just seems like over the last few years I keep hearing about Skeeter setting up these PDCs. He's going to teach a PDC, and like half of them end up getting canceled because there's not enough people. And they're getting canceled not because Skeeter's not good or anything, because he's really good.
He's a world class instructor, right? I mean, he's really
I think he's really awesome. And I mean, people who've seen him in my videos and heard him in my podcast, I think the analysis, you know, would come back 100%. He's good. He's really good. And I think
make $1,000 selling dandelions.
So I kind of think that the problem is that people don't know it exists. People don't know what's going on. I think that, you know, he's gonna offer a PDC, and he's gonna say, I'll take up to 25 students for this PDC,
mm-hmm.
and then he'll only get four people signing up. And I think that there are 2,500 people that would totally sign up for that and pay for it and go there and do it, but they never knew it existed.
Mm-hmm.
They just, and so I kind of feel like, so when I started Permies.com, in fact, my biggest push for Permies.com came shortly after I signed up for a class of the Bullock Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really excited about it. And I paid my money. I sent my money in, and I'm like, yay, this is going to be awesome. When it got to be about 3 weeks before the class started, then they sent me an email saying the class has been canceled because only three people signed up. And so it's like, no, yeah, because it was a little bit more advanced,
yeah.
And I was looking forward to it, and I thought, you know, if nothing else, it'd be a chance to talk about some very meaty topics with Dave Bainline and the Bullock Brothers and stuff like that. So I thought, I was thinking it'll be like a vacation-y kind of week, like let's really get together and talk some serious shop. This is going to be awesome. And I thought to myself, you know, the same thing. The problem is not enough people knew that this was going on and really knew, like, what the quality level was going to be. And if they did, then they would have sold out, like, in an hour.
Right.
So Permies kind of came around with the idea of, like, I need a way to bring more people in, have more knowledge exchange, and have, you know, more people where when the time comes that there's an event going on, that those people can be alert to it,
yeah,
you know, and like so. Because how does a person find out about a permaculture event? So I built Permies, and that was a big driving force, because in order for permaculture to get better known and stuff like that, we need to have more of these PDCs. We need to have more of this one-on-one education kind of stuff. And so there's so much to be done.
Right.
So then came the idea of this event. And Seth Holzer sent me an email and said, go over and check out the land and help this woman. She's kind of, feeling like she needs somebody to come look at this now. And so go over there. And she's currently talking to Seth about whether or not to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So I went over and I looked at the land and I had a long chat with her and so she's pretty much committed to having Sep come over, and so I didn't seal the deal there. They already met each other.
Mm-hmm.
So Katarina and Sep had already met, and she already wants Sep, and I may have helped with, like, you know, saying here's how we can get things to work out so you can afford having Sep come over and stuff. And so we talked about the idea of having workshops and having people come and attend the workshops and have a PDC before that, you know. And then based on what I know about her, I said the best person to teach it would be Michael Pilarski, based upon what I know about you. So it's kind of like, all right, so everything worked out. It all happened. I had to go back again at another time. And I normally charge $1,000 for a day visit. And you know, I charge... For anything that I do in the permaculture world, I charge a teeny tiny fraction of what I used to charge in the geek world.
Right.
And so it's kind of like, but you know, the thing is I'm bonkers about permaculture, and I have a passion about a mission here, about things that need to get done.
Right.
When everything got nailed down and here's the dates and here's when stuff's going on and whatnot, then I said to Katarina, I said, you know, the only, I'm going to promote this, I'm going to try and help sell your tickets and everything. The only thing I expect is that I get to come and hang out. You know, now I've already seen Sep do all of his Sep talk stuff, so I've already pretty much seen it. So, but I like the opportunity to be able to hang out, see Sep again, and maybe I'll video a couple of bits.
Right.
You know, so it's like there's really, like, the value to me is not the value of buying a ticket.
Right.
You know, kind of, it's not that level of value.
Right.
But I do feel like getting Sep's information into more brains is of great value, and
absolutely,
some people this is the way they want to get it. And then at the same time for the PDC, well, I've already taken a PDC from Skeeter,
mm-hmm,
so I know he's good. So I've taken his PDC already, so I won't get anything out of that either.
Right.
But I said the same thing to Skeeter. I just like the opportunity to hang out. I just enjoyed being there,
sure,
for the event 7 years ago. I'd like to you know, cash in on more of that good vibe that I got 7 years ago.
A little refresh.
I mean, I'm an old stick in the mud corporate whore, and I'm trying to. Who wears overalls now? And well, actually, I wore overalls all my life, but during the corporate whore days, I would set them aside to go and pretend to be, pretend to be a professional for a little bit. And
you saw yourself short. I mean, you were like the Yoda of Java programmers, right? I mean, somebody had an unsolvable problem, you come in with your cape and you'd solve it.
You're
being honest here, basically.
My job was to be a fixer of, like, things have gone wonky, and we have investors, and we're all going to
belly up.
Oh, we're going to go belly up if we don't get a guy to come in here and fix this right.
So call Gandalf Wheaton. Fix the problem.
So I had a role that I did, and I did stuff. I also want to talk about another aspect here before I get too far down the road with the PDC, and I'm going to go back to the corporate whore world and talk about that. And it's like, I think that as I would go about doing what I did, there are people that were like, wow, Paul Wheaton, because it's like my site was really big, and I had people that would like, I had a couple of awesome Beatles moments where people were like, oh my God, you're Paul Wheaton, oh my God, I love Java Ranch, you're the best. So that was really cool and everything, and the site was really good.
To this day, you've got the largest permaculture forum on the internet, don't you? I think you've got as far as website hits and so forth.
Yeah, permies.com is the largest permaculture site on the internet.
Right.
For a while, Java Ranch was the largest Java site on the internet.
Wow.
I'm not sure. I don't think it is now, though. I think there's one called Stack Overflow that's bigger.
But it's big. You got a foot in each world, and both your sites are at the top or near the top.
Okay. Yeah. Let's go with that.
And that's a hell of a marketing list too, because you've got. I know, like when I set up a permies, it's such great information and content that you disseminate from that site, and you use other media too, like Facebook and other social media, YouTube especially, but all those kind of, it all kind of filters through permies, so that's kind of like the mothership where you can go in and, you know, recharge the dilithium crystals and all your permaculture goodness from there. So, I mean, and I know from the daily-ish emails I get, I mean, you must have a mother load of an email list.
The daily-ish email is my favorite, you know, so when people sign up for permies, that's great. I mean, you put your email address in the forums at Permies, and that's great.
Right.
And when somebody signs up at on my daily-ish email, I don't know, that does something that makes me feel good. And then I feel like, because when I email stuff out and it goes to so many people, it's kind of like, you know, feel the power. And so I don't know, it's my own little thing there. I really enjoy I'm planning on doing some more things where I favor the people that are on the daily-ish email. I've been thinking a lot about that, and I wanna give the people there something more that doesn't go out through the other channels, because I don't know, I kind of feel like those people have trusted me with, like, because email, I know I get so much email, I kind of hate a lot of the email that I get. And so it's like, if people are sending me email, this better be good.
But it's an intelligent use of modern social media to disseminate information. I mean, how else are you going to reach a million people in an instant with some really good information that can help them become more self-sufficient, eat healthier, grow a lot of their own food, start to do some of these permaculture things that will help, you know, that is a ripple effect of goodness, you know, for the world, for people, for the environment, and how else are you going to do it and get that kind of information out on a massive scale other than like TV or something?
Oh, yeah. No, the internet is awesome. And I know a few things about how the internet works, which has been helpful.
Yeah.
And at the same time, you know, and this kind of leads into the next segment I want to talk about from the corporate horror world. I get approached, when I worked in the corporate horror world, I got approached by a lot of people that said, you know, the life you're living as a software engineer is so much more awesome than the life I'm living as a software engineer. You know, how do I get to be like where you are?
Is that because you were an independent contractor and they actually worked for a corporation at a paycheck? Or
I'd have to say that sometimes it's somebody who's working as as a salaried employee,
uh-huh.
And sometimes it's from somebody who was also working as a contractor.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, I don't know, there's a little bit more to it. And I think the big thing is that, you know, when I showed up, one of the reasons why people did not hire me is because I just charged way too much money. And it was pretty insane rates that I charged. And so then it's kind of like, you know, most companies are like, oh, hell no, we're not hiring that guy. He's way too expensive. And then 6 months later, it's like they're hiring me because
it was that messed up. The problem was that big that they needed to call in, you know, Michael Jordan to come fix it.
Well,
Jordan programmers.
Yeah, I might not be Michael Jordan, but I'm the same height as Michael Jordan.
Yes, you are.
So
I'm the same height as that too. Vertical leap.
Yeah. Michael Jordan is a pie-loving guy just like me, and he wears overalls. Yeah. So, but the point I want to make is that when people are asking me that kind of thing, and I got asked that probably about once or twice a month,
yeah.
And then I would sit down and say, okay, first of all, let's talk about pay.
Mm-hmm.
And pay is a weird thing because, like, you're going to show up to work. And I like the corporate whore analogy, and it's like, okay, are you a $2 whore or are you a $1,000 whore? It's like you're going to do the same job when you show up. And it's just, you know, the only thing that changes is how much do you get paid.
Right.
And here's the weird thing is that if you're a $2 whore and you show up, everybody treats you like shit. It's like they don't want to hear you talk. You know, you got a thing to do. You just do your thing and get the fuck out. And in the meantime, the $1,000 whore shows up, and they roll out the red carpet, and, you know, is there anything I can get for you? You know, and it's like, you are the best, and you're awesome, and, you know, it's very different treatment. Everything, every little burp that comes out of your pie hole is, like, flowery and perfect and awesome. And in the meantime, you say the exact same thing as a $2 whore, and the response is shut the fuck up. And so now am I exaggerating for any of this?
Well, no, that's been true in my experience as well, for the most part. I mean, you know, there are some exceptions, obviously, but I think sometimes the outside person that nobody knows coming from outside, doesn't have any emotional attachment to the company, who's not there every day, they're kind of the expert coming in from somewhere else, and the perception is that maybe they have a different perspective, and it's valued more. And I think, you know, it's human nature. You tend to kind of value more what you pay for more.
I think that's true.
And, of course, the exact opposite can be true. It's like some of the spiritual values or esoteric values, people deep down value more, but they tend to value what they pay for. I mean, things like a house or a car are very expensive. We value those things. But the truth is that those things can be replaced pretty easily, but you can't replace, you know, a person who passes away or, you know, without getting too deep into a spiritual conversation. But, yeah, generally speaking, I would say that is the case. They value whatever your pay level is. That's the smart guy. This is the more you charge, you're probably perceived to be that much better and greater, whether you are or not.
You use the word or the phrase emotional attachment, mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the things I was kind of famous for was not having that. And it's kind of like, you know, when I think what happens is you'll see this a lot. In fact, I'll sit in on a meeting and I'll get to see a lot of emotional attachment.
Yeah. So
and then
project, their pet project that they have so much time and energy invested in, it almost becomes like their baby, and they can't see the forest to the trees that, hey, maybe you're going about it wrong in a certain way.
I usually see it as like what the thing that they're valuing the most is their own personal career.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like their career mission versus the mission of the organization. And I do kind of feel like if you're in there being paid a professional wage, you're not there to look out after your career. Your career takes a back seat to the needs of the organization.
Right.
You know, but anyway, so these are the kinds of things that I was pretty well known for being callous, I suppose, being calculating, and like, you know, let's kind of, and I don't think that I'm a non-feeling person. Well, you know, based on my standards, I suppose, by other people's standards, I'm probably a real callous ass. But I
think you'd be a joke. I mean, you're a nice guy. The time I spent with you, I mean, you're a very nice guy. You're very giving. And most of the stuff you do, in my experience with you, and this is true from other people too that have known you longer than me, that most of the stuff you do, you give away for free. So you're almost like you're the antithesis now of what you were in the corporate world. But at the same time, in the corporate world, you would come in. I know from some of our past conversations, you would fix major problems that if they didn't get immediate fix would either bankrupt the company or cause them serious financial pain. And so, you know, you can make a strong argument. You give what you pay for, and your work. And sometimes it's the guy that comes in without the emotional attachment who can do what has to get done. And we see this all the time. Corporate CEOs are hired to turn a company around, and sometimes they got to make tough decisions. Or the guy that and you see this in sports. They hire a new manager or a new head coach who comes in, and you know, we're gonna trade the veteran who's been a stalwart of the team for years because we're trying to rebuild the organization, and we got to bring in fresh blood and hire. You know, there's all those kinds of things. So I guess it goes back to the old analogy that, you know, if you want to make an omelet, you got to break a few eggs.
You know what? The omelet and egg thing, that one was my favorite one.
Omelet we just had at Homestead. Did you see the omelet? That was delicious.
And we went to a restaurant, and it's called the Homestead.
That's how appropriate for a permaculture conversation. You know,
yeah.
Homesteading, permaculture, if you like this sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. And so then here with Bill Schneiders, and it's like, this is the first time ever I've been in a restaurant with a permaculture guy, and his eye goes up to the TV, which is on, which is, you know, most permaculture people are ignoring the TV, but it's like sports scores.
No, the sports center was on, and some guy ran on the field, and some guy made a great hit on him, like some crazy drunk guy. And it was so, anyway, it hurt my attention for a minute.
I'm just saying that because, like, I can't think of a permaculture person that I've ever known that was into sports, but you are into the sports. You're like, a lot of conversations I have with you, here comes sports analogies. Like, you are a sports guy. You enjoy the sports.
I love sports. Part of it is just the environment you grew up with. You know, I grew up playing sports, but also grew up with a garden. You know, my mom was a heck of a gardener growing up, and even though we lived in a relatively urban area in Pasadena, you know, we had a pony growing up. I used to do my paper route on a pony when I was a kid.
That's awesome.
And we had chickens. You know, one year for Easter or something, we got a bunch of baby chicks. You know, and my dad and I built a chicken coop, and my mom had a garden that was very prolific. I can remember times growing up, I'd be playing basketball for hours in the backyard with friends, and we'd be out there all day. We'd play Cowboys and Indians and play sports, and we never go inside because whenever you're hungry, you just grab an apricot off the tree, or we had a great plum tree, an orange tree, still have several orange trees, grab some tomatoes from the garden. You know, it was just kind of like this natural, healthy, organic way, and I didn't maybe appreciate it as much at the time, but I really do in hindsight what a healthy way to grow up that was. And you grab a drink out of the hose, and you just go out and play all day. And it was so nice to have that free food that's healthy, fresh, in abundance. And even as a kid, not understanding any of these concepts, I appreciate it, and also started to see the symbiotic nature, because my mom would come in and scoop out some of the chicken crap and mix it with water and do some of this compost tea stuff. And
the important part is, I've learned since spending time with Bill, is that he's crazy about permaculture, and he doesn't have an off switch when it comes to permaculture. It's like he wants to, that, you know, so I would definitely, a kindred spirit, very passionate, and now I'm going to play the role of Jocelyn and say, and now let's get back on topic.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, we got a mission here. We're in a podcast today.
That's right.
We're
going to
get through this.
Yeah, we're in a lot.
All right,
yeah.
All right, and I know you love the permaculture. I know you love it. So, all right. I was talking about my role in some of the corporate horror world stuff, and a lot of it was that I would get to an organization and they would have a lot of thrashing. They would have a lot of people very passionate about a lot of things, and they had lost a lot of their objectivity, and they were focusing more on the politics between each other than getting the job done. And some people would thrash more than others, and there was, you know, a lot of these companies, development velocity had come to a total standstill.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody was doing tons and tons of work, but nothing was getting produced. And so my job was to come in and fix that. And so as an engineer, I'd usually do engineering audits and say, here's why things are, you know, stopped, and then introduce techniques to kind of get past that. So, and a lot of it was that over and over and over and over and over again, I would be presented with the passion. Let's call it passion. That word might be crazy. And it's like,
far removed, though,
it's like, wow, you know, we're trying to build a product here so that everybody can have a job, And yet it turns out that the product cannot be made out of passion and crazy exactly. You know, especially not crazy.
Yeah.
And you know, the right kind of passion can work, but usually they didn't have any of the right kind of passion.
Right.
And so my job was to help, you know, let's focus on what we're going to accomplish in the next 4 hours. You know, and so we did, and let's see if we could just move forward 0.5% in the next 4 hours.
Right.
You know, so we would do a lot of those kinds of exercises. Well, all right. So anyway, trying to backtrack, I had people asking me about this, and my first thing was to talk about when somebody would want to pull me aside and say, I want to buy you dinner, and I just beg you, please help me to understand how I can change my career path to be more like yours. And I'd start off talking about the idea of the $2 whore versus the $1,000 whore, and it's kind of like, you know, and I think that in the corporate whore world, there are a lot of people that are professionals. They're being paid a professional wage, and they're earning roughly $50,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And there are very few professionals out there that have pretty much the same knowledge set, and they're getting paid $100,000 a year. And then fewer still that are getting paid $200,000, and then fewer still getting $400,000. So it's like, how do you get from 50 to 400,000?
Mm-hmm.
And I think most of it is going to be degrees of professionalism. Now, of course, there's nefarious things one could do. Let's just leave that out of the equation completely.
Right.
Let's talk about doing it with. I mean, I think a big part of it is first of all, amp up your level of integrity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and professionalism.
Mm-hmm.
Professionalism means that you answer the phone, that you return calls. So the people that are 90% professional, they get paid $50,000 a year. The people that are 99% professional, they get paid $100,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
The people that are 99.9% professional, they get $200,000 a year. 99.99, $400,000 a year.
And that's an interesting point too, because you see that sometimes it's like in the Olympics. You know, the guy that, you know, comes in first place and wins the gold medal, and the guy that, here's my sports analogy again, the guy that gets second place gets the silver medal. The gold medalist guy gets all the endorsements, all the money. He's the one that makes 20 million endorsements, and the silver medalist, people forget about, and the difference might have been a tenth of a second, you know,
right.
Using my 100 meter analogy. So sometimes it's like the guy,
they didn't have the grizzly bear.
Yeah. It's true though. If you do a really good job, you get average results. If you do like a really, really, really good job, you get good results. But if you just do the best job and are the 99.9%, that guy gets all the rewards, all the love. And sometimes it's very little that separates, which is good news and bad news. The good news is that all you do is up your game a little bit. You know, if you're the 90% guy, just up your game 10%, and you can be the guy, you can be the 400K guy instead of the 2K guy or 50K guy.
So now, I've worked at jobs where I was paid, you know, less. Like when I was younger, and it's kind of funny. There have been a couple times where it's like I came to a company, I worked for a little bit, doing one thing, and then I came back doing the exact same thing a few years later. Only then I was earning 10 times more.
Yeah.
And like the responses, you know, my interaction with the people there was completely the opposite. So it is kind of like when you're being paid less, then the you know, you try to say this is a problem. And I think, and I have concerns, and I think that we should look at it. And you know, the company could be in a pickle. And when you're being paid less, it's, the response is pretty much shut the fuck up, or we're going to fire you. We're paying you to write code, not to open your pie hole. And so it's kind of like there's that. And then you come back being paid 10 times more, and it's amazing how they roll out the red carpet. And this lovely woman here is Mary. And yes, she's beautiful. And Mary will get you coffee whenever you want it. And she's going to. And then, by the way, these people over here are all low-level VPs. They're going to answer any question you have about anything that you might want. And then these people over here are going to be. And it's like they roll out the red carpet.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, this is the same place.
It's all
the
perception, same place. Isn't it? It's just all perception. You come back as the high-paid guy, and it just, I think it proves the whole point of this podcast that sometimes people people per, you know, value more what they
right. And so it's like
pay more for and
so and now we're gonna come back to the permaculture world. And so here we have an event, and it seems like part of me is kind of thinking like, okay, well, maybe what I should have done is I should have worked up a deal ahead of time to say, you know, hey, Skeeter, and Skeeter's totally doing everything right. You know, he's fine. And I, hey, Skeeter, here's the deal. For every person who comes to you and buys a ticket and says, I learned about your course through Paul Wheaton, I want you to, you know, now normally earlier we said it'd be $500. You know,
right.
But I could say, Skeeter, I want $200 per person that comes your way. Maybe it'll be one or two people. Maybe it'll be more.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, you know, so a kickback of $200.
In exchange for that, I'll drive attendance and I'll fill up your event.
Well, you know, I'll
fill it up.
Not even, yeah, like I'll, you know, if I sell a few tickets and I'll help promote and I'll do this. And, you know, so a little bit of love in the form of dollars, you know.
Right.
And by the way, you know, I'd like to come and hang out at the event, you know. So I would imagine I could have totally worked that out.
Yeah.
You know, that would have been. I mean, he would have been like, oh yeah, no problem, easy.
Not only from the marketing perspective, you driving attendance, but also the fact that you're a permaculture expert yourself, and you're a PDC certified guy and a master organic gardener and yada yada yada. You have all the certifications. So just, you know, we know an event like this in the off time when people are talking, I think some of the best value in these types of classes is sitting around and, you know, sipping hot chocolate in the tent after the end of the day, and then that's where some of the best ideas or exchange, just like, you know, the opening night or the night before the opening night when I was out there, some of the most interesting conversations and best ideas that were thrown around the table were, I mean, as great as the course content is, that was the real juice for me, is talking about people, what they're doing and what their experiences, and you adding to that conversation with all your breadth and depth of knowledge, this great knowledge base and all this content you've created, and, you know, you add a lot to the equation. So even from a standpoint of just enhancing the whole event by you being around, being able to answer questions, talk to people offline, you know, participate in those off-hours conversations, that there's a value, a tangible value on that. It's a little hard to measure, but it's there.
Sure. And the other thing is I'm teaching, I think, two or three different segments, then doing like two or three evening presentations or something like that. And the norm is that in a PDC, it's a norm for a PDC, is that when you have a guest instructor, they usually teach a half a day,
mm-hmm.
and then they can hang out for a couple of days,
sure.
you know, and it's not like they're charged, and they're usually paid about $300-$400
right.
to come out and do that. So it's kind of like, you know, so there's that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, okay, so I could have worked it out for Skeeter to say, you know, hey, Skeeter, you know, and it does seem like Skeeter, after getting the event put together and all that stuff, just because I connected the things up and, mm-hmm. you know, and set them up with an event that's going to work out, it seems like Skeeter would probably, I mean, granted, in the corporate whore world, it would be $10,000.
Right.
But, you know, people in the permaculture world live a little leaner. It's a different industry. Things are a little different. Seems like Skeeter might, you know, say, hey, Paul, here's a grant. Thank you, man. I think this is the second PDC I've set up for him.
Yeah.
And so anyway, there's that. And then we all probably could work on a deal, say, okay, for every person that I send your way, maybe a couple $100.
Mm-hmm.
And I would imagine that he would say, you know, like if I worked it out ahead of time, he would have said, sure. But here's the thing is, like, I feel so good about Skeeter, and I feel like he is so good. He is really good, I'm totally cool. Just like, you know, I support this because it's good,
right?
And I want more good stuff to happen. I want to see lots more good. There needs to be more good in the world, and damn it, I'm going to help.
Right.
And so I put my stuff behind it,
mm-hmm.
and it's just because, and I, you know, Skeeter just thinks I'm a guy. I don't think Skeeter realizes how big this empire is, and he just thinks I'm just this guy that once took a PDC from him a long time ago, and I recorded some podcasts with him, taking some video. I think he has no idea how many people see it. I think he doesn't quite get it, and so. But on the other hand, I kind of kind of feel like, all right, so I helped make sure that the event happened, and then on top of that, like, you know, well, leaving out the SEP stuff, just with Skeeter and the PDC event, I mean, like, I've probably got 10, 20 hours put into trying to help, you know, make sure that this came together and happened and whatnot. And
you drove up from Missoula a couple times, right?
I drove up from Missoula, and normally I charge $1,000 a day to do that, but I didn't, you know, because this is going to be awesome.
Yeah.
And I really want to see it happen.
Right.
And I've asked for zero. I've basically said all I want to do is be able to kind of hang out. And as an afterthought, I contacted both Katarina and Skeeter and said, you know, I have an extra guest I'd like to bring along for a couple of days, just like 2 or 3 days here and 2 or 3 days there. And they both said, yeah, that's cool because you sold so many tickets.
Right.
That's totally fine.
Right.
And it's like, that's cool. That's cool. So, anyway, so I think I've covered quite a bit of this, and then came the event yesterday. So then this is kind of like what led me to believe, like, wow, really? Did that just really happen? So one of the things they do now, when I took this course 7 years ago, one of the things that I did is that they had this chore sheet thing, and so I paid $900 to take a PDC. So this PDC is $1,500, but when I took it, it was $900, which I thought was crazy cheap for a 2-week course, and that included 3 meals a day.
Wow.
And I got a bed inside.
Wow.
And there's like an actual real life shower.
Yeah.
And it was actually a nice PDC course. I thought it was nice. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, like a $1,000 night hotel or anything like that, but it was like, you know, wow.
A warm bed
it
and a shower.
Warm bed and a shower, it was perfectly decent.
Yeah.
You know. So I just kind of thought, how can they do this for $900? I'm not sure if that really even covers the food and the place to stay.
Yeah.
You know, but $900, that was it. And wow. So it's like,
maybe they got the event center donated or something, you know. I don't know.
No. I think it was far more complicated than that. And I kind of wonder. Anyway, but you know, the bottom line is I paid $900. And so when they said, write your name down on chore stuff, I'm like, no problem. I remember helping me make breakfast one morning, and I took the compost out I don't know how many times, and I think there were like several other things that I chipped into as well, but I really enjoyed the table conversations, like what you're talking about. Oh yeah, we had a lot of, and at that point in time, I was one of the few people who actually had acreage and had actually done some permaculture,
right?
And so people were asking me a lot of questions at the table and stuff like that, and I don't know. I think at that point in time, in 2005, I was still pretty knowledgeable in permaculture.
Yeah, you already know ponds and stuff too, don't you? Aquaculture stuff.
There you go. So I had some experience, at least on the homesteading aspect, and I just really thoroughly enjoyed it. And so this time around, I'm not there to be a student really. I'm there to kind of bask in the glow a little bit and maybe be a bit of a resource. And I'm there to teach some segments. And part of my concern with being there at all, though, is that it's like I've got the empires to run, Code Ranch and Permies and anything else I've got going on, and it just seems like it goes on and on and on, and I'm, you know, so now normally, you know, the email that comes in is too much for me to deal with any one day anyway, so now I'm dealing with even less.
Yeah.
And like this morning I spent 2 hours uploading podcasts to Susie Bean so that she can process them.
Right.
And so it's kind of like, you know, there's always work to be done. And it's like, so, and then in the meantime, like all the time I'm there, it seems like I'm constantly talking to people about stuff, which is great and everything. And one neat thing is like, I think almost every meal I'm having this long engaged conversation and somebody will come along and say, hey, Paul, do you want me to take your plate up to the sink there and get it washed? Which I'm pretty passionate about. You got to wash your own plate. And so, and I, and they did, because I'm like answering questions, and we're running out of time, and we're trying to like scramble, and it's
well,
like
nice. It's nice
that was cool.
They appreciate the value you're bringing them.
That I appreciate that, and so pretty much what I did was is that instead of asking for any money for any of the things I'm doing, pretty much what I'm saying is, I want to come and have a warm fuzzy. That's really all I want.
A little soul building
kind of thing.
A little candy for the soul, a little emotional.
Yeah. And then, you know, it's been so great. There's been so many people that want to shake my hand. Some people came dressed in overalls, saying that they wore the overalls for me.
A nice couple from Libby bought you the pie, too, right?
Pie. That's right. The Pantry Parade of people. Yeah. And so I was right. Kaya from Pantry Parade. So we had cherry pie.
What's
PantryParadis.com. They sell homesteading supplies.
There you go, folks.
And so they brought me pie, and it's always great to see them. They're awesome folks.
Yeah.
And we had pecan pie and cherry pie. It was so good. I believe she has two more pies that we haven't dug into yet.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
I hope to bring you back a piece of one of them because I missed out on the first one.
Yeah, we'll see if that happens.
Paul, that's a big piece of pie for the guys. I don't think it's
going to happen. I think I ate five pieces of pie that night. I'm not exaggerating. I think I ate five pieces of pie while we're sitting with those pies.
My mom's going to be up here in a week or so. She makes a mean pecan pie.
Sweet. So I'm thinking the real thing I want is I just want to have, you know, the good vibe. I'm happy. And so
I'm warm fuzzy.
I'm not worried about getting a finder's fee for getting the thing set up. I'm not worried about getting paid any kind of marketing material for driving people, because, you know, I'm so passionate about this is the right thing to do.
Right.
And then
pretty generous, because that's a lot of money you're leaving on the table. Based on the corporate, you know, percentage, that's a heck of a lot of money you're leaving on the table out of the goodness of your heart.
Well, after doing a little analysis, like after the event that, after the thing that kind of like triggered this podcast,
right.
And it's like, you know, but it's like it's going to Skeeter, and, you know, and it's kind of like I like the idea. It's like, no, this is totally cool. I don't want to even have the conversation about money with them. You know, I just want, and so, and then as far as like teaching the segments and the stuff, like, you know, that would normally have a price tag on it too, but I'm not asking any money for that either.
Right.
And what triggered this is that I learned that leaving the money on the table was a mistake. Because what happened was is that because I left the money on the table, I left all the money on the table. I didn't even ask for like a dollar. You know, and it's like because I left all the money on the table, that there was somebody there who would not contribute unless they were paid. So they're, you know, and maybe I'm wrong about that. But my impression is that if they were not paid, they would not show up, they would not promote it, they would not do anything to help with it. But they're there only because they're getting paid to be there. And so this is a woman, and I know her, and so then they passed around the chore wheel, and it's this chore wheel thing, and it's like I'm thinking, okay, well, instructors don't do chores. So for example, Skeeter and Marisha and the other instructors, their name is not on the chore wheel, and I'm an instructor, and so the instructors don't put their names on the chore wheel. So the chore wheel went around, and when it came to me, I passed it on to the next person. I did not put my name on the chore wheel. And then the day goes on.
And you help promote the event, all the things we talked about.
I feel like
in a lot of other ways.
Hey, I'm not even sure if I'm going to be there every day because,
right.
I like, today I'm not there.
Right.
There's just too much other stuff I've got to get done.
Right.
And so today I'm not there. There's a lot of days I'm not going to be there. I'm going to be there. And so I spent some time over there this morning trying to figure out, okay, what days am I presenting?
Right.
And let's get that ironed out. And if I have to miss some days, what are some days or the days to miss?
Right.
So, you know, so... I really feel like I can't. And it's like, when would I even have the time? If I come up with an extra 2 minutes, then I need to go and plow through some email.
Right.
And so it's like, usually the chores are things that'll take you like 15 minutes to do.
Right.
If you got dish duty, you'll be there for probably an hour. If
right.
you got, you know, a food prep duty, you know, probably an hour, hour and a half.
Right.
You know, and so it's kind of like... I'm trying to think of, like, you know, and so I'm kind of feeling, all right, I've put in, other people may have paid $1,500 for this, but in a way I've sort of put in $20,000 for this event.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's granted, it's like not exactly official or measured or anything like that. But basically what happened was is that I guess I'm going to do a little analysis and that this woman has fallen into a common pitfall. And I suppose I should have mentioned some other things about corporate. I mean, it's a funny thing that in the corporate horror world, it's like one of the things that I advise people to do is that always make sure that you work no more than 39.9 hours in a week. There's a weird phenomenon. If you ask any manager out there, and you said to the manager, hey, who are you going to promote and who are you going to pay more, the people who work 39.9 hours a week or the people who work 60 hours a week? Oh, I'm pretty sure the answer would be pretty universal, the people who work 60 hours a week. And yet, if you look at the history of who they actually promoted and who they actually paid more, it's going to turn out to be like 90% of the time the people who work no more than 39.9 hours per week. It's just a bizarre phenomenon. It has to do with how the human brain works. These people respect themselves, therefore I respect them. If I want them to keep producing or whatever, these kinds of mentalities, it's an interesting and fascinating thing, and it's powerfully effective. And it's like it goes completely against the grain. Now, I have to ask you, is another guy that's worked in the corporate horror world, is what I've just said, is it accurate?
Well, to be honest with you, I've seen it accurate in some cases because, and there's all, you know, there's a lot of different variables that weigh into this, but for like an engineer type person, like what you were, sometimes the engineering manager will say, you know, these guys have the same skill sets, but I'm getting 60 hours a week out of this guy. I'll promote the other guy that's working 39.9 because he can be a manager and I'm still getting this extra. It's almost like they take advantage of the guy who's given more. I will say your analogy doesn't always hold up on the sales side because when you're a sales guy like I've been, that extra 20 hours a week, you're out there in front of customers, you're generating relationships. So it's not
level. You get paid on the results.
You get paid on the results. And that's what I love about the sales side, actually. I think sometimes in other aspects, other jobs within an organization, you don't always get paid on results. You just get paid your salary and the job.
Right. When it's salary stuff. So I'm talking about salary stuff.
Salary stuff alone, I would agree that I've seen that phenomenon as well. And it doesn't make sense intuitively or rationally, but it does exist, you know. And again, there's always exceptions. But
now, I said 90% of the time. For a salaried person, 90% of the time that this is the truth. Is that number seem about right to you?
Yeah, I think so. I'd maybe take it to 75%, but it's definitely the lion's share, the majority of the time.
Yeah, okay, all right. So I believe that at this PDC, that with this individual who is a worker bee, that the worker bee came to that same conclusion, that because I was paid zero, and she was paid, I'm going to guess that she's probably going to get paid $1,000 for helping out. So I would guess that she would therefore see her value as $1,000 and my value as zero. And so then when the chore chart goes around, then she doesn't put her name on the chore chart, on the chore wheel, because she's being paid $1,000. She's like above that. And you know, and of course you don't put Skeeter and Marisha and the other instructors. You don't put any of the instructors' names on the chore wheel.
Sure.
You know? And so so I pass it along, and then later, you know, we're all gathered there to learn some things, and we're all doing stuff together, and then the attention turns for a moment to this woman, and she announces to the group that because I forgot to put my name on the chore wheel, that she added my name to the chore wheel. And just to show how defective I am, I didn't say anything. I just kind of like stayed out of it, you know, because what was going on inside my head was that, you know, now I came here and my pay was a warm fuzzy. And now my pay just got cut in half.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, you know, so I kind of feel like, wow, I'm putting in In order for things to be even and appropriate, and that I should have received something to the tune of about $20,000 for what I've contributed, because it turns out that almost all the students there found out about it. Like at least there's 45 students, and at least 40 of them, found, because they had a thing where it's like everybody stands up and introduces themselves, and one of the things that they do is they talk about how did you find out about the event, and it was like probably about 40 out of 45 said through Paul Wheaton.
Wow. So you drove like 95% of the attendance. Do you think maybe this person wasn't aware of the contributions you'd made on the back end, like getting this thing going, all the free trips you've made and so forth, and driving that attendance?
I think that person is aware of that, but then that person also sees the value of that contribution to be zero.
I saw the value of the contribution as everything. I mean, if 40 out of 45 people are there because you made them aware of it, and you drove, and by the way, that's how I found out about the SEP thing, is through you. So, I did hear a neighbor mention it like a year ago that he might be coming, but as far as the specifics and actually where do I sign up, that was all through you. So my thing is, if 40 out of 45 people are there because of you, you are the reason for the event.
Well, so I knew, of course I agree with that, but I may be biased.
Yeah.
So I think
I'm not trying to blow sunshine your way. I'm just looking at rationally. Even if I didn't know you as a friend, I'd be like, yeah, this guy contributed. That's like common sense.
So it seems that way to me too. And of course, I think if you have a person that hasn't provided much in that space, mm-hmm. that they don't understand or comprehend the value of it. And so then I think that, what we're seeing here is a person who has made this common error. And it's like, I do believe it's an error.
Yeah.
And I do believe that. And it took me a while to process it. And it occurred to me that I just lost half of what I was getting paid for what I asked for. And so I just kind of think that. And it occurred to me, so my mind's racing, and I'm not saying anything. And I'm just kind of thinking, this is an example of what's holding permaculture back. It's like, and it's not like, I'm just so upset about it, but I do kind of think a lot of like, why is permaculture not around more? Why do we not hear it more? And I kind of feel like, how many other people went out and promoted some kind of event and they got no gratitude? I mean, in the geek industry, we pretty much know that, you make that connection for me, here's my gratitude in the form of a check for 10 grand.
Right.
You made these 27 connections for me for these 27 students to come and fill my class. Here's my gratitude to the tune of $500 per student. I know that I got paid a lot of money. If you got somebody a job, like if you hired somebody in an organization, I've been paid 20 grand to bring people into an organization.
Yeah.
So it's like we need to have a bunch of engineers here. We need good engineers. And so I was getting paid 20 grand a pop to bring in new engineers.
Yeah, yeah. Every corporation I've worked for has always had a finder's fee for new employees that you bring on and get hired. And that's usually a minimum of like 2 grand. I mean, and usually more like 2,500 to 5 grand. And if it's a position that really does to fill, like right now, like they need a Java programmer because a certain project for a big customer is a timeline, they might pay, I've heard of those kinds of numbers too.
20 grand, yeah.
I've never received that, but
I
know they exist.
That was part of what I did. So, I used to make a lot of money. And I think that's another part of it too, is like if I was, really into the money anymore, I don't think I'd be doing this. I mean, there's just so little money. Yeah, anyway, so it's like, and these guys, so many of these guys are like working for so lean, and they're doing so much for so little.
Yeah.
And it just seems silly when people call me up and they say, oh, hey, we want to wet your beak to the tune of $40. And it's kind of like, really? $40.
Right.
$40. And it's kind of like, can we at least talk about 10 grand? Because it's like, I just am not motivated by $40. So,
but that's not why you're in this. You're doing this for the passion and to spread the word, and because you see it as something that could help you know,
globally.
Yeah,
change in the world.
Good, yeah.
World domination. So, so I just kind of think that, and then of course this person is also like very passionate about, we should all love each other. We should all, you know, and it's all about, let's all be, you know, equal. Let's all help each other. Let's all, you know, it's all good things, all hearts, flowers, and rainbows. And so this person's got a lot of that going on. And it's kind of like, and I kind of felt like, you know, this moment in time, where you elected to put my name on the chore wheel, didn't strike me as a hearts and flowers and rainbows thing. I mean, maybe it did to other people. Maybe it was entertaining. So the day wore on, and I'm biting my tongue. I don't want to spoil the event for anybody else. And by the time this podcast comes out, the event will be over. You know. So, but I do want to express that it's like, you know, you got to pay attention to these things. Oh, anyway. So later on, this individual said that that she had talked to several other people, and there was several people who believed that it would be appropriate for me to put my name on the chore wheel.
Sounds like they're biting the hand that feeds them.
Yeah,
or you know, feeds 95% of these.
And you know, I kind of
think it's a big deal per se. Like I know you're the first guy to help volunteer do chores. You went there a day early just to help out, and we were walking around doing stuff. We were unloading tables and chairs, and so it's not that. It's just the fact that I guess it's just a lack of appreciation, respect, and gratitude for driving the attendance, for setting up the event, for coordinating the details, getting the word out, all the stuff you did on the front end. It seems like kind of a lack of appreciation. Again, I'm an outsider looking in, but it seems pretty obvious to me.
Right. I think most people have no idea what it is that I did and or how I helped, and that's fine. Those are invisible things.
Right.
Those are invisible things. And it's kind of like I do kind of feel like here is this individual who has arrived, and because there was money, because she was paid to, come, and by the time that you and I arrived, and she had probably by that time put in maybe 15 hours, 20 hours, and you know, without any knowledge that I had probably put in 40 hours, you know, so she doesn't know. But you know, she does know that I'm not getting paid to be there, and so therefore she makes that conclusion. So the point I want to make is that I do believe that there are a lot of people out there that really want to help the permaculture movement. And, you know, that reminds me, too, because there's so many people that help with permies.com to help permies.com move forward, and even more people helping out with Code Ranch. And I worry that I don't express my gratitude appropriately or often enough. And it's kind of like I think I must really suck in that space because I just get too, you know, caught up in a bazillion other things.
Right.
And so, you know, I hope that these people are feeling the reward that I feel, which is that when we get back the statistics and they say damn near 1 million people, then it's kind of like, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That, you know, gives you an idea of how much we're changing the world.
Right.
And it's kind of like, I know that's the thing that feeds me more than anything else. In fact, it seems like a lot of times people are like, oh, hey, I'll pay you $40. You know, I want to wet your beak for $40. I want you to do this for me for $40. And it's kind of like, you know, $40, you do not have my interest at all. But, you know, you want to talk about promoting hugel culture, promoting ponds, promoting permaculture, promoting homesteading, making links to my stuff, stuff like that, you know, whatever. This kind of thing, building traffic, letting people know, putting an article in a magazine, something like that. Now you got my attention. You got my attention. What can I do for you?
Yeah,
you know,
it's all about the money as much as promoting the message. And if you were only about the money, you'd probably still be in the corporate world full time.
Absolutely. I mean, logic and reason says money is the thing to go after,
right.
And I did very, very well in the corporate world, and so I, you know, I can always, I still get people calling me wanting me to do that, but it's like, boy, I just don't have the interest. So doing what I'm doing now is something that I'm so crazy passionate about. I am willing to live very, very frugally to move this forward, and I spend way too much time doing it. And so when the chore wheel came around, it came to me, and it's like, my thought was, is like, I'm not only can I not take the time, but I just feel like I cannot add another responsibility right now.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the responsibility is like understanding what is the chore you're going to be doing and how to do it well.
Right.
And then, of course, going and being there on time and doing it. And it's kind of like I'm kind of thinking like under other circumstances I could do that. But right now, I'm not sure, like, I'll even be on the land during that day.
Right.
So then that thing doesn't get done.
Right.
You know, and it's kind of like, that was part of the deal for me to come, because I said, I'm just going to come and hang out for some of the days.
Right.
And it's kind of like, now what happens if I'm not there that day? If I just signed up for some kind of obligation and then it botches some other plan that I have on that day, some other appointment I have, some other whatever I've got going on. So it's kind of like I felt like, since I'm an instructor, I'm feeling like as I'm holding the chore wheel, I'm feeling like it is my option. I can opt in or I can opt out. And I feel like I have to opt out. I have to not do it. I can't take on. I can't add anything more to my plate. And I'm not just a student. I'm an instructor.
Right.
So it's
my teaching several of the events. And, you know, that alone should disqualify you from having to do that, plus, having the knowledge of all the background stuff you did to set this thing up. It reminds me of the old adage that no good deed goes unpunished.
Right. Yeah, and so part of me kind of thinks, like, wow, you know, because I just had my pay cut in half inadvertently. I mean, she didn't know. Yeah. There's so much stuff that she didn't know.
Right.
And so I kind of feel a little bit like, yeah, all right. In order to be able, because like if I had charged them $20,000. For all the stuff I was doing, I was like, "No, you got to give me this money for all of these different things."
Mm-hmm.
If I had done that, then I imagine that the chore wheel would have not, you know, like me not being on the chore wheel would have been totally okay.
Right.
Because it's like, you know, this woman probably be aware of how much I was paid.
Right.
And then she would have been like, well, she's getting 1,000 and I'm getting 20,000.
Well, you mentioned at the beginning of this too, that, or at some point in this podcast, that in the beginning of the event, they asked, like, how did you find out about this event and so forth? And like, you know, roughly 40 out of 45 people said, I heard about it from Paul Wheaton.
Right.
So that alone should have been like, wow, this guy was like the single driving force behind getting the attendance here. I think that alone would have been a clue.
Yeah. So let me just state, like when I went to Great Falls, then I told them that if they get at least 50 people in the room, that my fee would be $1. But if they get less than that, it would be $250 because I'm not going too far.
Right.
But it's like, you know, I've gone to some events and it's like, oh, right, we scheduled you to come to this event and we're so excited for you to be there, but we forgot to tell anybody. And so there's like only 6 people here.
Right.
You know? And so I was thinking, okay, Great Falls, I've never been to Great Falls. It's not that far away. And they were like, so their emails to me were like really rolling out the red carpet. Like, we would be so excited to have you. It would be so awesome and spectacular. And they're like saying all the right things, you know, and sending out a big, big warm fuzzy. There's a whole group of us here.
Right.
We're all talking about it. So it's not like I'm just one psychotic person who thinks you're cool. It's like we've all been talking about it, and we would all love to have you come out. So then I said, if you get 50 people, I'll charge $1 to give a presentation. And so otherwise it'll be $250. Normally I charge $400 to give a presentation. But it's like, close by. I kind of was feeling like I've never been to Great Falls, but I've lived in Montana so long and I've never been there. That's just wrong. And I got there and they really rolled out the red carpet.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, we're paying you $250, you know, even if we have 100 people. You know, so don't worry about that. You're getting 250 no matter what.
They wrote a real nice article on you too. That was great.
They did. They
followed up with a really nice article, and I think had links to your site, and just seemed very gracious. People seemed very gracious there.
They even wrote something in their newspaper out there.
Yeah.
You know, and so they had something in the newspaper before I went out, and then they had something that they wrote up after I left. It was really nice, and there's been a lot of places. I mean, Great Falls isn't the only one. So there's been a lot of places where they really rolled out the red carpet. And by rolling out the red carpet, it's like they didn't spend any extra money or anything like that other than the $250.
You just felt appreciated and respected.
I got there and I had somebody who was going to drive me around everything and show me the sites and be a tourist. And then they took me to the permaculture sites and then lovely people got to visit with them. And all these people wanted to shake my hand and it just was a warm fuzzy.
Yeah.
And it's like, the $250 is, of course, just a, I mean, you know, in the old days, in the corporate whore days, it's like, you're not getting me out there for anything less than $5,000, you know?
Yeah.
So, but now it's like, so $250, that's nothing.
Yeah.
That's nothing. And it's like, but the thing that I got out of that is that, I mean, most of the people there were master gardeners. Most of the people at the presentation were master gardeners.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all warned. They were all warned about my style. My style.
Right.
Don't bring the children.
So, an emotional expletive might slip out.
And so then there was this woman there who was like so old that she had a hearing aid in, and she strapped a microphone onto my bibs so she'd be able to hear me, because it's like otherwise she can't hear. So then at some point it's like so she took the microphone back. She says, I can hear you plenty well. I don't need this. and then somebody is like worried about, you know, any language I might use. That she's like, I've heard that shit before. and so it's like, okay, so she's good. She's cool. In fact, at one point I'm giving the presentation. It's in a basement, and the lights go out.
Uh-huh.
Like the power goes out for like the city.
Wow.
And so I just kept going. and I said, ha ha, I get to see the pictures and you don't. Because my laptop's running off of a battery.
Right.
I can still see it.
Right.
But we're in the basement, so it's totally dark. So people started holding up their cell phones to illuminate me. and we went on for another 15 minutes in the dark.
Wow.
Before the staff from the library came down and said that they're like worried about safety stuff, and so they want us to move upstairers.
That's hilarious. So they're the audience that's holding up their cell phone, like in a rock, like you two at Red Rocks or something.
I don't know. I don't know how much it illuminated me, but I was talking to a bunch of cell phone screens there for a while.
Yeah.
And we just kept going, you know. So and then the next day, I don't know. It's just like everything. You know, good meals and lovely people, and they knew about my stuff, and they were excited to see me.
A little soulful, spiritual candy, you know, giving you the warm and fuzzy, and you know, having the right attitude of appreciation and gratitude.
Yeah,
and willingness to learn, excitement about, enthusiasm for it.
So, I guess the point of the podcast is, I can kind of see for a lot of the events that go on,
mm-hmm.
things go sour, and what happens is that I think that they do the hearts and flowers and rainbows thing, but it's like hate in the name of love. So like someone's gonna do something really great for them,
mm-hmm.
and then them are going to reciprocate with something nasty. And they're going to justify their nastiness with hearts, flowers, and rainbows. And so you're supposed to love this. When we hate you, you're supposed to know that that's our form of love. Something like that. I mean, this person that did this, I don't think that they're trying to take me down a peg or anything like that. They're not trying to. But it's like, basically, that was an unkind thing. And if this person really felt that you know, I needed to be on the chore wheel list, like that was the appropriate thing to do, I think it could have been handled discreetly instead of like handling it with the, you know, in front of the entire group.
Right.
And so it just seems like, and then discreetly I would have said, no, I'm an instructor. And frankly, I'm not, you know, I can just explain. I'm not sure what days I'm going to be here.
Right.
And because we're still trying to get the schedule hammered out on what days am I presenting.
Sure.
You know, so it's kind of like, but that's not what happened. And I'm just kind of thinking, you know what? It's those kinds of little details like that I think run rampant in the industry, mm-hmm. and I think that there needs to be a little bit more care in that space.
Well, maybe you could make the analogy that as much as we joke about the corporate world, I mean, and some of the deficiencies in it, there are some good things that you learn. I almost think it would, I mean, as much as I love being my own, you know, boss right now and have my own company, it's because I don't have to deal with a lot of those politics and so forth that I used to. I do think that at least maybe for a kid coming out of school, it's not a bad thing to maybe work in the corporate world for time. I don't think you should spend their life there unless you really love what you're doing or with a great company. And there are some of those that exist too. But I think you do learn some of those basic business ethics and quid pro quo and, you know, you set up this thing for me, so I'm going to take care of you either financially or for this referral. And maybe some people that haven't been in that world don't understand that fully or appreciate it.
Well, I think part of the corporate world is that you'll go along and you'll do a bunch of good things for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And then there's still quite a few of them that don't get it. And then they will, when they're presented with the opportunity to do the same for you, they don't, mm-hmm. or they don't express their gratitude in any way, shape,
right.
or form.
Right.
And so then you move forward, and then what happens is that there's like you've done all these things for all these people, and then like two or three of them showed their gratitude. And you remember that gratitude, like, wow, they were very grateful.
Right.
And so I wish to do something for them again because they seem to like me and I like, I mean now, aren't we just talking about human nature and just like, just people liking you?
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that what it is? It's like, I like you so much, here's a check for 10 grand.
Yeah, and people like to do business with people they like and they like to, you know, work with people they like in general. It doesn't always happen that way, but I think just basic business ethics and appreciating what somebody else does for you is, I think it's kind of common sense, but I think that is one good thing I did learn in the corporate world, I have to admit, is that usually the people that really took care of you or those partners that resold your product that really want to work with you versus the ones that, you know, would never call you, that, you know, those are the ones you tend to gravitate to and work well with. So I guess
that's a big part of where I'm trying to get at. I'm trying to think it wouldn't hurt if some of these outfits were probably a little closer to the corporate world maybe. And it isn't even so much that it has to be like that as much as it is like, you know, you did an awesome thing for me and I want to make it clear that I noticed it and I respect it and I'm grateful.
Right.
And I guess as I'm going along and seeing different things, then I'm not seeing that. I don't see that happening. It's like, oh, well, you don't express that because, of course, you're also trying to do permaculture stuff and move things forward or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering, I suspect that this component is a big reason why the permaculture movement's somewhat stalled or has been in the past stalled. I mean, I think we're moving forward a lot more in the last couple of years. But in the past, it's been rather stalled. And I kind of think that this could potentially be a component.
Sure.
That there's not respect for the people that have done this stuff, mm-hmm. and helped to push it out there.
Right.
So and I, of course, I do worry that I'm not doing enough. I to show respect to the people that have helped with my mission, mm-hmm. to try and just get permaculture out there more. And so a lot of people have like put a lot of love behind Permies and Code Ranch, and I feel like I'm a bit of a doofus and defective at appropriately showing my thanks in that space. And I'm open to more suggestions in that space. Frankly,
yep.
Maybe that's a good topic for the Tinkering Forum.
Yeah.
Let's find ways, better ways to recognize those that are putting in the work, that are doing the work and helping out and actually chipping in a big way. So Jack Spirko sent a bunch of people my way. Jack Spirko if I had never been on his podcast, mm-hmm. then I would never have started a podcast.
Right.
And so, and of course, he's going to be here
right.
just in a week or so.
Yeah.
A little more than a week, and hanging out with us.
Yeah, he's a lot like you. He's contributed an awful lot. I know he's. I listen to some of those podcasts, and he's really contributed a lot and gets a lot of good info out there, like you do. But Jack was also in the corporate world for a long time, if I recall correctly.
Right.
I talked to him in Vegas. I think he worked for a networking company. Did a lot of corporate stuff before he, you know, went on his own. So I think he can appreciate those ethics too. And so I think, you know, sometimes people just get so busy, I think, too, in their own. Like in your case, I know you do appreciate the people that help you permies and code rants because you've told me so. But, you know, sometimes we, and this happens to all of us, you get so caught up in your own world, your own busyness and your to-do list and your own little silo that you forget sometimes to say thank you and show appreciation. So there's the human element as well, I think.
Right, right. There's a lot of human element. All right, so if I left anything out, we made like a little bit of a list here. What are some things I might have? We got everything all covered there.
I think so. I think we, you know, basically keep those best basic ethics. Do unto others. Love the customer. Make sure you're customer focused. And some of those lessons from the corporate world will help promote permaculture better, I think, if we exercise some of those.
Yeah. So, all right. So I kind of feel like I'm a little concerned that what I'm saying here feels a little bit like sour grapes. I don't want to be Mr. Sour Grapes. But I do feel like at the same time there's an important lesson here. There's an important thing, and I'm about to go back there, and I'm feeling a little bit like, you know, should I say anything? I'm probably not going to say anything. I'm probably going to just be the bad guy. And if nothing else, I've got a very thick skin, and I'm used to being the bad guy. And so in which case, I will just be this jerk that didn't put his name on the chore wheel. Because I'm sorry, I can't do that. So if my name is on the chore wheel, then I'm just not doing those chores. I'm not even going to look. And I'll just be the, I'll be an awful person. And not say anything, and take the repercussions that come from that. And if I need to, I mean, my first thought was is to just leave the event entirely. That I would just, you know, if it's like, wow, if $20,000 isn't enough, and that they need $20,050, then I just kind of feel like. Really? That's the deal? Then it's kind of like, I just kind of feel like I would just not go. Because I do kind of get the impression that since most people there, there's a lot of people that are there to see me. And I kind of feel like, wow, the person, you know, so I have to pay to be there even more. And so, I don't know. I was really thinking for a while there of like, I'm just going to leave the rest of this event, and it's not Skeeter's fault. It's Skeeter's event. I'm just going to leave the rest of the event, and I'll come back for the SEP thing, you know. And I've got a lot of work to get done, so it's not like, you know, what'll I do to while away the time? I've got mountains of stuff to do. But I think I'm going to do what I generally do, and I've got a thick skin. I'm a big boy, and I'll just be the bad guy. And you know, we'll see how it rolls. Does that seem like a wise idea to you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm an outsider looking in because I'm only attending this type of event. From what you told me, and if you drove the attendance for 40 out of 45 people, I think, if nothing else, for those people that are there because you made them aware of it and they're, you know, fans of your work and have learned a lot from the content you put out there, if nothing else, it'd be nice for them for you to continue to show up and just kind of bite your tongue and, you know, basically be there to answer their questions and, like I said, get that juice in the off time when you're sitting around the table and sharing ideas. So I think that will enhance the quality of the event for them overall.
Yeah. All right. Well, if you like this sort of thing, which, gosh, I don't know.
Slightly off topic. But
maybe you don't like this sort of thing. I don't know. It's some tough stuff to talk about, and it's some tough stuff that is indeed important, and it is worth keeping consideration of. There's this forum where we talk about homesteading and permaculture all the time.